Narman, the Earl said. They're the church, the vicarate. They can do whatever... Can they? Narman interrupted him. The pudgy Prince of Emerald raised his right hand, jabbing his index finger at the window. Can they? He repeated, pointing at the Carisian galleon sails. I don't know about you, Travis, but I'd have to say their plans didn't work out exactly the way they'd intended, did they? No, but it's not going to end here, you know. Narman's voice was calm again, and he seated himself on the padded window seat with his back to the wall, gazing up at his taller cousin. Given even the church's purely secular power, the odds against Karis's survival are high, of course. But Caleb's already proven Karis isn't going down easily. I would rather have preferred being here myself to see how it all works out, of course. But even though I won't be, I can tell you this much already. It's going to take years for anyone to overcome the defensive advantages Karis already enjoys, and it's going to take a lot more ships and a lot more men and a lot more gold than the group of four ever imagined in their worst nightmares. Cities are going to be burned, Travis. There are going to be murders, atrocities, massacres, and reprisals. I can't even begin to imagine everything that's going to happen, and at least I'm trying to, unlike the group of four. And when it's all over, there won't be a single prince or king in all of Safehold who doesn't know his crown depends not on the approval of God or even the acceptance of the church, but on the whim of petty, corrupt, greedy, stupid men who think they're the archangels themselves come back to Safehold in glory. Travis Olson had never before heard anything like that out of his prince, and hearing it now frightened him. Not just because of its implications for his own power and survival, either. He'd always known, despite the way his rotund little rulers, allies, and opponents alike persistently tended to underestimate him, that Narman of Emerald was a dangerously, dangerously intelligent man. Now, it was as if his own impending defeat and probable demise had cracked some inner barrier, loosed some deep, hidden spring of prophecy as well. Narman, think about what you're saying, please, the Earl said quietly. You're my prince, and I'll follow you wherever you may take, Emerald. But remember that whatever else they may be, they speak with Mother Church's voice, and they control all the rest of the entire world. In the end, Karis doesn't have to, Narman interrupted again. That's the very point I'm making. Whatever happens to Karis, whatever the group of four may think, this is only the beginning. Even if they manage to completely crush Karis, it's still only the beginning. This isn't God's will, it's theirs. And that's going to be obvious to everyone, not just to someone like me or like Gregor Stonar in Siddharmark. And when it becomes obvious, do you really think the other princes and kings are simply going to go back to sleep as if this never happened? As if Trinair and Clinton hadn't proved no crown is secure, no city is safe, if it's foolish enough to rouse the ire of the group of four or whoever replaces them on the Council of Vicars? He shook his head slowly, his expression grim. The one thing in the entire world the church simply can't afford to lose is its moral authority as God's voice, his steward among his people, Travis. His voice was very, very soft. That's been the true basis for the world's unity and the church's power since the day of creation itself. But now the group of four has just thrown that away, as if it were so unimportant, so trivial that it wasn't worth so much as a second thought. Only they were wrong. It wasn't unimportant. It was the only thing that could have saved them. Now it's gone. And that, Travis, that is something they will never, ever be able to get back again.